Hey mamas, welcome back to the So You Had a Baby podcast. I'm your host Krista, and this is episode 52. This week, I have the extreme pleasure of being joined by Reagan Walsh. Reagan is an NYU certified executive and life coach who focuses on helping women who are overprogrammed and underwhelmed to reclaim their lives, both personally and professionally. She contributes to Harvard Business Review and Forbes and has been featured in Fast Company, NBC.com, Today, and Real Simple. She has coached thousands of women through her one-on-one group coaching programs, and she regularly is asked to give keynotes, facilitate workshops, and speak on panels for Fortune 500 companies. She has done so for clients like Freddie Mac, Nike, Intuit, and JP Morgan. Reagan is located in Columbus, Ohio, and coaches people from all over the world. In addition to that, Reagan is an author and published her first book, Heart Boss, earlier this year. Ladies, I cannot say enough about how incredible Reagan's book, Heart Boss, is. As a woman, as a mom, as an entrepreneur, this book hit home for me in so many ways. She is so real, inspiring, and funny, and she shares her life and her knowledge so authentically that you feel like you've made a new friend by the end of the book. We had so much fun talking about her motherhood journey and her book, and I can't wait for you to listen to this episode. Also, don't worry, as always, I have shared links to how to find Reagan Walsh in the show notes, on Instagram, and on my website. So if you like what you hear, please take a moment after the episode to rate the podcast and leave a review. I love hearing from you, and you leaving a review helps other mamas find the So You Had a Baby community so they can grow in their motherhood journey as well. And we all know that empowered mamas change the world. So without further ado, Reagan Walsh. Hi, I'm your host, Krista, and this is the So You Had a Baby podcast. Postpartum can look different for everyone, but the one consistent thing I've found is that there is not enough positive conversations happening to empower women in this beautiful journey we call motherhood. Join me and my incredible guests as we share empowering stories and topics to inspire women to grow and love themselves more throughout their postpartum journey. Together, we will work to change the stigma around postpartum. Okay, so I am so excited to be joined today by Reagan Walsh. Reagan is the author of Heart Boss, Trust Your Gut, Shed Your Shoulds, and Create a Life You Love. So before we jump into anything and I have you introduce it, I have to tell you, I loved your book. I have, as you can tell, a ton of little sticky notes for me to share on just I feel like I could read this book over and over just with all the valuable information and your stories. I just felt like I feel like at the end of the book, I knew you better and like I could call you my friend.
You certainly can. Thank you so much. I'm so glad you enjoyed Heart Boss. It means the world.
So Reagan, I'm going to have you jump in, tell listeners a little bit about yourself. So your name, your profession, who you're a mom to, and what led you to an interest in working in your field. And I will say you have a lot to cover in regards to your field. So kind of go where you'd like to.
Sure. So Reagan Walsh, and I am currently living in Columbus, Ohio, and my family includes my super foxy husband, Nick, and I have two daughters, Dorothy, who's 6, and Maeve, who just turned 5. And my life's work is so fun. So I get to help women who are trying to do and be all things to all people reclaim their lives, both personally and professionally. So the women that I work with typically come to me and they're like, is this it? I thought that I wanted this high power job and the 3.5 kids and this and they get to where they thought they always wanted to be. And they're finally feeling overwhelmed and underwhelmed at the same time. So they're overwhelmed because they're committed to too much. They're underwhelmed because they're not enjoying it. So I help them dive in and figure out like, What can we shift here? What can we shed? How can you dial back some of your obligations and feel like you're living your best life? So I do that through coaching, through group programs, and it's the career love of my life.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I feel like I can relate so personally to trying to be all of the things and also feeling like none of the things are working and everything. So
it comes from a place of good intention, right? We want to help others. We want to give back to our communities, but we're doing it at a cost of risking our health and our mental health. And we need to take care of ourselves.
Absolutely. And I feel like moms especially, I feel like are so guilty of trying to be all the things for everyone. And a lot of times, I'm sure you see this so regularly, the person who isn't getting poured into is ourselves. We just kind of lose ourselves and all of it and are so worried about everybody else's opinion that you're like, well, lose yourself in it.
You absolutely do. You put yourself last and then there's nothing left. Right. And they're like, I don't even know who I am anymore. So we could go on about that for a long time.
True. Very true. So before we jump into your book, I would love for you to describe your postpartum experience in one word. What would it be and why? And you have two daughters, so you can share both stories if you like.
The first, I would say anxious. Mm-hmm. And we can dive into this a little bit more later. But nursing for me was nearly impossible with my first daughter. For my second daughter, I would say overwhelmed because my girls are 16 months apart. And I felt like I had two babies that were at different stages. Yeah. And I was alone a lot because my husband traveled and I felt overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm. So let's go ahead and jump into your postpartum story. I would love for you to share them both.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So the first time I became a mom to my daughter, Dorothy, I knew because I'm in the world of shedding shoulds, I knew I was going to nail it, right? So I didn't want to do baby showers that didn't align with me. I knew that once I gave birth, I didn't want a lot of people coming in and out of the home. I just wanted to enjoy those moments. And so I felt like, oh, I'm totally going to win this. So then I get home, I'm producing almost zero milk for my child. I had hired a lactation consultant and she was such a gift and also wasn't able to help me produce milk. Like she came over every single day and I'm talking for 3 weeks. She was with me trying to figure out and troubleshoot and it wasn't coming. The milk wasn't coming. And everybody around me was like, try drinking dark beer. Are you eating enough healthy fats? You need to not pump as much, get her on your breast more. And I'm like, I'm literally nursing her 16 times a day, trying to stimulate milk production. After I attempt to nurse her, I feed her a bottle and then I get on the pump because again, I'm trying to like, my body needs to be stimulated. And Krista, they were the darkest and saddest days of my life. I remember sending a photo of me with like the pumping machine to a friend. Mm-hmm. And my friend wrote back two words and she said, looks dry.
Oh,
she's not a mom. And she wasn't trying to be offensive. And it brought me to my knees. Like I was trying to be funny, like, look at what I'm trying. And then her response looks dry. I was like, yeah, because it is. Yeah. What I didn't know, Krista, and what it's interesting because my lactation consultant, we've kept in touch a little bit. And she said, because of your experience, I've been able to help other moms detect what happened to you faster, which like makes me cry.
Yeah, I was like, I chilled.
I know, like I'm going to cry now probably. I'm sorry.
Great. I cry all the time on this podcast.
Well, I know. So thank you. I have Hashimoto's syndrome, which is a thyroid disease, and I didn't know I had it. So my support system, you know, my lactation consultant at the time didn't know to ask about my thyroid. My OBGYN was like, oh, this happens to new moms all the time. Like, it's just hard to get your kid to latch. And if you have a second baby, it will be easier. And today I'm so angry that response was okay. Like it wasn't okay, but I was like, okay, I guess this is just what's happening.
It's just normalized.
It's normalized, mm-hmm. which wasn't the problem. Like she wasn't listening or meeting me where I was. And it was 6 months later that I happened to need a checkup. And my doctor looked at me and she's like feeling my glands. And she's like, I think you have a thyroid disease. I didn't bring up milk production or anything. I did get diagnosed. And then I asked her, I said, hey, would this impact my ability to produce milk? And she's like, of course it does. Like it operates your whole system. And And at that point, I think it was at 7 months because I had stopped nursing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I cannot believe this. Like, I just was so sad. And my daughter kept having reactions that I think now looking back was from her formula. Her skin was crazy with eczema from mm-hmm. head to toe. And it was so sad. And like, I didn't know that. And I'm trying to make all these healthy choices for my baby. And Krista, I just cried and cried and cried. And people are trying to be helpful. They're saying the things that are like daggers in my heart, you know, yeah. because they're trying to be helpful, but it's not. And I just felt so lonely and like a failure with my yeah. first daughter. And, you know, I wasn't losing any of the weight. Again, that was the thyroid not operating. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I was exercising an appropriate amount. I wasn't overdoing it. I was eating healthy food. I was doing everything I thought I should yeah. to be successful. And I felt like this big fat failure, right?
Yeah.
So then move on to the second child. I was on thyroid medication. The birth, you know, I knew what to expect. She latched immediately. The anxiety I had because of my first experience was real high. And I remember crying in the hospital on that second day, you know, sleep deprived. And again, a doctor, I just said, I want to know that she's getting milk. I'm mm-hmm. so nervous. And I was crying. And it was a doctor that was like rotating in. I didn't have a relationship with. And she yeah. said, you know, you might have depression. Like, are you seem really anxious? And she wasn't, again, meeting me. She was just talking at me like yeah. a patient, and she wasn't being an advocate.
Yeah.
And I just was like, what is going on with our medical system? I'm scarred. I'm sharing what my first experience is. I want you to look and see if I'm doing this right. And yeah. you're just like worried. I understand you're here to like look for mental health, but it turns out that my second baby was back to her birth weight by her 1 week checkup. And I celebrated yeah. with margaritas.
Yeah, as you should.
We went out to a restaurant. My 16-month-old was home with our nanny. We went to a restaurant. We had quesos and chips, and I had one margarita. Margarita, which, you know, of course I was like loopy from one margarita, but I was producing milk. I felt confident. I nursed her the whole time. The anxiety was dramatically reduced for the second time. I was just overwhelmed because I had two small kids. And it's while from a big family, like I don't have a support system locally. Other than my nanny, who at the time had very limited hours to give us. And so man, if you're a mom and you don't have a support system, it is so hard. It's hard if you have one.
Yeah.
If you don't have one, it blows. It really blows. Yeah.
Well, I think what's even, and on top of that, I'm also from a very large family, and I'm also don't have any family in this area. And it was even harder because I knew that support existed somewhere, but they weren't anywhere close to me.
They weren't there for you. You know, my in-laws are so kind. They live in a different state, but when we do need a break, like if my husband and I want to get away for a weekend, like they will come in and help. You know, my mom is almost nearly blind and in her 80s, and I'm in the sandwich generation. So I have to worry about my mother and my babies at the same yeah. time. I'm like, no one's worrying about me.
Yeah. So I just had a baby. Can someone check on me now?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so hard.
It is. Well, I'm so glad you shared that because I feel like all of these experiences, because I feel like this happens, unfortunately, more often than not when women go in and say that say these things, and to voice the hard thing you're going through out loud when it already feels like the weight of the world is sitting on you and you're failing, to voice it out loud and someone not be loving and empathetic and hear you and how like try to meet you where you are and walk with you. Like you said, they're talking at you and it's coming from a place of, you know, they're doing what they're supposed to do. But unfortunately, I feel like when you get into that mode of doing what you're supposed to do, you're checking boxes, not looking at a person sitting in front of you who's falling apart.
Yeah. You're totally checking off. You're not truly checking in, right? Like yeah. a check-in is listening, partnering, hearing, not jumping like, oh, all moms have trouble nursing their babies and milk production is slow. Like, that's what I want to say to those people. Like, screw yourself. Like,
yeah. And also there's other things happening in your body that could be doing that. So
yeah,
look at me.
Look at me. And like, why did my primary care doctor figure that out in literally a minute? And my OBGYN, whose whole life's work is helping moms deliver babies, she never even considered it. Yeah. It's just nursing is hard. I'm like, no, I know it's hard and I'm working my ass off to do it, but it's not coming. And somebody that's working this hard shouldn't like not have production. There's a different reason.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so, I feel like there's so many things in postpartum, which I'm sure you see and hear so often, is that we've just gotten to this place where we normalize all of these struggles that women, postpartum women especially, deal with. Like, oh, well, it's happened long enough, so it's normal now. Oh, it's happened. I've heard that from lots of women. That's normal now. Like, what point do we start, do we stop normalizing these issues and really give workarounds so that women can thrive and not be
feel like seen and held and feel successful? And then we also say like, okay, then go back to work.
Yeah. Yeah. Do it all and then do some more.
Yeah, and don't get benefits. And I mean, the whole thing, it's just like, there's so many things broken with our system. And how great that we can have these conversations to help other moms like not feel so isolated.
Absolutely. So what would you say were your biggest struggle and biggest win in postpartum?
I would say, well, the struggle for sure was nursing. And I think the win for me, I did a really good job of redirecting my negative thoughts. So while I felt like a failure, I knew I was doing everything I could. And so it was interesting because I was catching my negative, I call it head trash. I was catching the head trash and I was doing the best I could to kind of reframe and be gentle with myself. And I think that was probably life-saving. If I didn't have the skill to do that, which I learned through coaching, I probably would have had a much darker experience than I had.
Yeah. There's a story that you shared in your book about right after, I think it was your second daughter, where you just were feeling overwhelmed and your family wanted to, I think it was, you said your in-laws wanted to come and I remember reading this part and totally laughing because I knew the feeling where basically you needed something and you needed help and you look around and everyone around you is sleeping and not available. And I was like,
you know what?
Everyone wants to come help, but no one's there to help for the things you need help with. And you like, but I love one of the things. I mean, that story felt so true to, I'm sure any woman reading this is like, oh my God, I have been in that situation. I'm glad you're getting your rest. So I'll go ahead and take care of me.
I mean, can I tell that story real fast?
Yes, because please that story.
So here's the situation. So that was with my first daughter because I did things differently the second time. So with my first daughter, in-laws come to town and they flew in, you know, on a Saturday morning. And I think the day before I was, you know, I'm still bleeding and my mom, her vision at that time wasn't as bad. So she still was able to drive at that time. And she called me and said, is there anything you need? And I said, yes, I need pads. Now her vision was good enough to, let's say, drive a car, but not good enough to not see that the pads she picked out were scented, which is a whole nother sidebar conversation as to why that exists. Okay. Like, why are we putting perfume on maxi pads and then putting them in our underpants? I have no idea. So my mother brings over scented maxi pads and I lost it. I was like sobbing, not to her. I just went upstairs and sobbed because I then had to go do that because I didn't want to hurt her feelings and tell her that I couldn't use them, but I'm bleeding, right?
Yeah.
So I know I'm good for that night, but Saturday I'm going to need them. So now my in-laws are here and it was a long night and they traveled and they're sleeping on the sectional couch. Each of them has a section. My baby's on one of those like bumbo pillows sleeping. Mm-hmm. My husband was napping in our bedroom and I needed pads. Like I needed them. It was a situation, right?
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh, my like internal rage was so high. And I got my keys and I went to CVS and I bought pads and I went to the juice store and bought like green juices and things that my body was craving. Because again, the food that I was getting was stuff that my body was not craving. And it was like to satisfy my husband, you know, it was like, I didn't want spaghetti and meatballs that my mom was making for my husband. Like, that wasn't what I needed. Anyway, fell apart. And before I had my second daughter, I went to my therapist and I said, I need to manage expectations. I need to do a better job of asking for what I need. I cannot let what happened with my first daughter happen with my second. And yeah. I don't want these, you know, I don't want my in-laws in my house because I know that this has the potential to like increase my anxiety. I'm tired. I know I'm going to have to entertain, even though I shouldn't, but that's yeah. what happens. It's like, I end up preparing meals when I just pushed a baby out of my vagina, right? Yeah. This is not going to happen. So we talked about it, which we all did, you know, like we get it. If yeah. you know, I'm not here to entertain you and I don't need you to hold my baby. I need you to do my laundry, make me meals and run errands, right?
Yeah.
So the second time around that happened, we actually put them up in a hotel because we didn't really have as much space to have two babies and my in-laws. And thankfully my husband was cool with that. Like he's like, yeah. I agree. Let's have them stay at a hotel. They can come over in the morning, stay all day. And then we still have our space.
Yeah.
And we were way more successful. And my mother-in-law cooked lasagna and like put it in the freezer. And, you know, we put them to work in other ways versus yeah. just like sitting and visiting. Like the last thing I want to do is sit and visit. I just want to like take a nap.
Yeah. With somebody else, with your baby and someone else do all the things to keep your house running.
That's what I want. Like, I just want to snuggle my baby in my bed all day. I don't want to sit and chit chat with you.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like you cover this a lot in your book. And I think this is kind of like one of the, for me, after reading your book, I thought this is like this is part of like one of the things you're trying to get past is you have to really speak up for yourself and do it unapologetically because no one else is going to do it for you. And I think you kind of mentioned that after that story in the book is like, you realize like, I didn't ask though either.
Right.
And we have to, and I feel like as moms, we get into this mode of you're supposed to know, and I'm not going to say it. So I'll wait until you figure it out. And while I wait, I'm going to boil over with resentment because you're not doing it.
You are supposed to know that I just got a baby from inside my belly to outside into the world, that I am sleep deprived, that I am nursing around the clock, that I don't have energy to do any of this. You're supposed to know that. Anyone should know that. And still, people don't like fully meet you where you are. You have to be able to ask for that help.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's funny because I feel like having had a baby and going through a lot of that, I realize myself, my husband will never, as much as he wants to, he'll never understand what I went through. He didn't have to do it. And so in those moments, you really do have to speak up and say, look, this is hard. Everything feels broken. I'm going to need you. I need you to step up here. And this is what it looks like. This.
Yes.
And anyone who comes over needs to do this.
Yeah,
and
here's the list.
I need to sleep.
Yeah. I wish I would have made a list for people. I've heard moms doing that, like making a list. If you come over, look at the board and these are the things you can do to help.
That's genius.
It is genius. Like, why don't we all do that? And also, do most people actually want to help or do they want to come over and snuggle a newborn baby?
I think the second.
I think so too. And so for those people, I had a lot of those people and I shared a little bit in Heart Boss that one of my friends got upset with me because I was put up this boundary, but I knew she just wanted to come over and hold my baby and chit chat for 2 hours. And what I needed was to be able to snuggle my baby in peace and not entertain people. Right. Yeah. And she eventually got over it. I think we haven't talked about it in a while. So we'll see. I'm waiting for her to read the book and let me know, but you know, I think you have to be willing to offend people in order to stand up for your needs. Cause otherwise, like, you're just going to be running ragged all the time.
Absolutely. There's another story that I think is worth sharing that I also thought was, I was so glad that you shared this story, was that having your friends came over after you gave birth and you had plans to, I think this was your second daughter as well. You correct me if I'm wrong, but you had plans to go to a yoga class that you were so excited for. And you sat there as your friends were talking And they took their time. And then after both two of the three friends were talking and left, you had one friend who just kept telling a story. Oh, and then needed to change a diaper. And I was like, oh my God.
Where is the social awareness? Read the room.
I know. And I feel like every woman, especially after giving birth and in that phase where you're just like, if I could just get that one moment to myself, I'm really looking forward to it.
To stretch you don't want to be body.
Ugh. Yeah. Well, and you don't, we're so worried about offending other yes. people in these stages and in our hardest moments that we throw ourselves under the bus over and over.
And what I should have done. So there's a group of four women that we would get together and we all had at least one baby. Some of us had two babies and we would get together maybe once a month. We were all solopreneurs and it was just such a beautiful time to come together and help each other. And it's so funny because I was hosting that day and my husband was getting home, you know, at 11:30, I was going to walk. I live in an urban environment. To me, mm-hmm. walking places is everything. I was walking to yoga and then this, you know, the two friends leave. And then the third is talking. And then she's like, oh, my baby, you know, soiled his diaper. I'm going to change. And she's changed. You couldn't change a diaper slower if you tried. You couldn't change a diaper so slow right now if you tried. And she's talking and she's telling me her whole story. Krista, I'm not kidding. My heart was pounding. So my husband's there to take care of my kids. I'm signed up for the class and I didn't want to offend her or rush her. And what I should have said is, hey, let yourself out. I have this 1 hour this week to get to my favorite yoga class and just stretch and be away from a baby on my body. And I'm going to take it. Help yourself out. If you need Nick to help you and the boys to the car, like go for it. Just he's here. But I didn't because I didn't want to interrupt her story because I like to be present for people. Yeah. And I wasn't being present for my own needs. And even hearing the story today, my heart started fluttering about it because I'm like, read the room. But you know what? I also have to stand up for myself for people who can't read the room because not everyone can.
Well, in that it's such a good reminder because most people won't.
And, most people won't.
And the reality is I'm sure this friend is a really good friend and was also in that same phase. And what we don't think about is if you said that, she would probably be like, oh my God, go. I know what that feels like. Like that's my tomorrow.
Exactly. And then the burn of all of this was, of course, I got charged for the class because I signed up for it and then couldn't even go. I'm like, I am losing so big today and letting other people, you know, just like keep talking. That's on me. That is so on me. Oh, thank you for bringing up that story. I would have forgotten it.
I love that story. I'm honestly, I feel like I can quote to you so much of your book because all of it resonated so much with me and like in all different phases, but
yes,
I love it. I love it all. I think this is actually a really great question is looking back on your first year of postpartum, is there anything that you would do differently?
Well, so what I would have done differently is gone to my PCP or asked, I would have found somebody earlier with my first daughter to figure out if there was something else with my body going wrong. So I would have done that differently in the first year for sure. And with the second daughter, I think I would have had a better support system, right? Mm. Like I wasn't doing myself any favors. We loved our nanny so much, but she was very limited in the number of hours she could give. And I would have benefited from more time because I still was running my business, right? When you're a solopreneur, you don't really take a lot of time off. Yeah. And so I was running a business and with my babies and that was a lot to do, to try to juggle with 20 hours of childcare.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. Listening to, I feel like because of the women that we have on, or that I have onto the podcast, I feel like this is such a reoccurring story. But in that phase, I feel like all of these, yourself included, we try to do everything. The fear of dropping one of the things or fear that someone else is going to look in and be like, oh, I see that you're screwing up here and you're really failing at life at one of these or all of these. And like the reality is from the outside view, everyone sees that you're doing everything. And it's okay to ask for help.
Totally. And I like the irrational fear. So I launched my business in October. Mm-hmm. I had my first baby in January. So it's not like my business was at a point where, you know, I wasn't thriving in business. Mm-hmm. So in January, you know, I was featured, I think, in a local magazine, which was awesome timing, the middle of the month. And my daughter was born like the second week of the month. And so then I got an inquiry from a potential new client. And I was too afraid to say, oh, my baby's 8 days old. And why don't we meet 4 weeks from now? Because I wanted that client. Yeah. Would you believe, Krista, that I met her at a coffee shop, I think 12 days postpartum?
Oh my gosh.
Why did I do that?
I do believe that because we it's hard to set those boundaries for ourselves.
Yeah, I know. I'm so mad at myself. It's interesting because she did become a client and we keep in touch, and she even sharing that, like, she had a baby not too long ago. I'm like, do not do what I did. I was so afraid that if I didn't say yes to you, that I would never have a client and another paying client again, because my business was an infant and my baby was an infant. And, you know, we have to expect realistic expectations. So if there are any women listening that own a business or a solopreneur, like, you got to give yourself a little more grace.
Well, and to remember, I mean, this is a little bit of a sidetrack, but to remember that it's okay to say no, because if that client is angry and can't respect your boundaries, that's not a client worth keeping. And we so, I mean, myself, I've done this many a times, is as you're starting a business, you want to say yes to everything because you feel like you can't say no. Yeah. And so you say yes, and yes to, you know, yes to all the family coming over. You say yes to the new client, and you say yes to the, you know, the date night that you know you really want, but don't have time. You know, you say yes to all of it. And inside, you just get so frustrated and nothing is done. And you talk about this in your book as well, but like, you can't multitask. Nobody multitasks well.
No. And everything has losing. A trade-off. Yeah. You're always, something is always losing when you're trying to do it all. So yeah, being really clear about what the trade-offs are. And if I say yes to this, what am I saying no to? If I say yes to this new client meeting, I am saying no to healing my body and getting respite, right? If I say yes to respite and healing, I'm saying no to meeting that person right now, but I didn't even give myself the chance. This woman, had I said, but I didn't want to, I didn't want her to know I just had a baby. Had I said, I'm on maternity leave and I can meet you 3 weeks from now or 6 weeks from now, she would not have cared.
Yeah. No.
I was putting that expectation on myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it's the story of everyone's life, is the expectations we set for ourselves that we can't live up to.
I mean, so it's so
that
funny.
We shouldn't either.
I know. It's just outrageous.
Yeah.
But we all learn the lessons, and hopefully we do better the next time.
Yeah. We learn lessons, unfortunately, the hard way, but that's how you learn the best lessons, right?
Totally. Like it or not. I agree. Yeah.
So what is the biggest lesson you've learned from your postpartum experience that you would pass on to somebody else?
Get help. Yeah. So for me, it's interesting. I don't ever give advice unless somebody asks me like that question. So for me, because of my like breastfeeding trauma, it's have a lactation consultant lined up. Right. So that's like my number one. If it doesn't come easy for you, don't suffer through that alone the first 3 days because it's stressful. So that's what I would say. Just have it lined up.
Absolutely.
And also, this is kind of a silly one, but it's something that I did. I baked before and put like really yummy muffins and lactation cookies and stuff in the freezer. And then I would get them out and put them next to my bed for 2 a.m. feedings because I was hungry. I think that's a great tip. Yeah. Like, make your favorite baked good and have it by your bedside table for 2 in the morning.
I've told this story before on this podcast, but I didn't prep any food for myself. But I did prep 4 rolls of cookie dough of different types of cookies and put in my freezer so we could have fresh cookies whenever we wanted.
That is like, I think that is prioritizing the right food group.
Frankly. I felt like it too, honestly.
Yeah.
We were all very happy about it.
Like, there's nothing like a warm chocolate chip cookie.
I at know, any time of day. Fresh.
Yes.
Or just the cookie dough. I don't know if that's ideal if you're a dietitian listening to me talk about eating cookie dough.
Well, then log off, okay? Because yeah. Everybody likes cookie dough. Everybody likes raw cookie dough.
They do. They do. And I was like, well, this is a priority, so I'll make this.
Oh my gosh.
It wasn't even so lactation good. Cookies. It was just cookies.
So. Yeah, just cookies. Whatever. Yeah. It does the job. Yeah.
It does.
It comforts. So. Yeah.
Oh, and I needed it then. So,
uh-huh.
So we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about your book and what you do and all of the good stuff. So just to kind of start off, what inspired you to write Heart Boss?
Heart Boss has been a labor of love that's been on my mind and my heart for over, I think, 12 years, if you can believe it. So I've always loved to write and I love to tell stories. And mm-hmm. when I was going through major life transitions back in like 2008-ish or 2007, I think, I started writing notes. Like when I write a book someday, I am going to talk about my first marriage. When I mm-hmm. write a book someday, I am going to write about this funny journey I've had with incontinence, even though I'm not a mom. Like at the time, I was wetting my pants in my late 20s, exercising and like getting urine all over the exercise mat. And I was like, isn't this what women do who've had babies? I hadn't had babies. I just was a leaky bladder. Okay. And all of these stories are very funny. And so I'm like, this is going to go in a book someday. So the idea was birthed literally when I was in my late 20s. I have been writing notes ever since. And it just finally felt like time. Like I had all the stories and the lessons to put Heart Boss together. And it's been such a delight. I have to say, I'm so glad that I used quarantine to finally like get it out the doors, and it published in March of 2021.
Yeah.
And it's been such a gift to hear from friends and strangers alike of what moments really resonate with them and what's changed their lives, which has been amazing. It's such a gift.
So I think what's really amazing about this book, I mean, besides all of it, I know I've said this a few times, but honestly, I plowed through this book so fast, and I have highlights all over it and sticky tabs all over it. And I think what's amazing is that you have this really beautiful balance of sharing your life and all of these really funny, like anecdotal stories and experiences. And some of them are really heartwarming and some of them are sad. And like, I've got the full gamut of emotion reading this, but then you also tie in your experience as an executive coach and life coach. And I feel like I got to take away so many nuggets of like, there's one of these areas that I've highlighted that I actually put a note, do the exercise. And one of the, it's in your chapter, the remaking your bed. Mm-hmm. And I highlighted something that I just think was like, I need to remember this every day. I'm going to read it if you're okay with that.
Please, I would love that.
And it's just a short little quote, but is, we only have to sleep in the bed we've made this morning tonight. Tomorrow's a whole new day. And for me, it was like, I need to write that somewhere that I can look at every day. Because, and it was in reference to your brother saying,
sleep in the bed you made.
Sleep in the bed you made. And I was like, you know, we hear that. And I think especially as a mom, you think like, well, you know, I asked for this and this is it. And it's not it. And sometimes it's just a matter of asking for what you need and standing up for yourself enough to go and get the things you want. And that doesn't mean you have to get rid of everything else. It just means you need to figure out your priorities. And then after that, you gave a list of how you actually walk clients through working to prioritize and figure out where things fall and how to rearrange them so that you're doing what feels good for you. And I literally will do this exercise.
I hope that you do. And then I want you to tell me, you know, what shifted, because it's true. It was so number one, it was important for me when I wrote Heart Boss to not just share my stories, but to help people then make that leap. Okay. So when I do this behavior, right, then what are the steps to not do that behavior and to pivot? Right. So that was very important to me, that it wasn't just a memoir. It was like, okay, here are the ways to stop pleasing, to stand up for yourself and all of that. And when it comes to remaking your bed, every day we can choose to get a whole new bed, right?
Yeah.
We can choose to make our bed different a different way. We can choose to parent a different way. We can pivot how we do anything. We can change gears. And we, for some reason, we get so afraid to change our mind, whether it's in business or in love or in how we make choices for our kids. The minute you have the courage to say, you know what, this no longer feels good, I'm going to do what does feel good. That's when life changes. Right. Yeah. And you're really living your true potential. And, you know, to my brother, who we've since, you know, gotten past that moment, but I was so like turned off by him. He was upset that I got divorced. I told him I was sad. He said, good, you should be sad. You need to sleep in the bed you made. Well, no, you don't. No, you don't. Yeah. I'm changing my bed. I threw out that bed. I got a new one. And you know what? I am loving my life now. And I've built a beautiful life that is in alignment with what I need.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's so easy to get caught in this cycle of someone else doesn't like this, so I need to keep doing this because I don't want to upset the people around me. And how is it going to, my life's going to fall apart because all these people are going to stop supporting me and all these people are going to go away. And then, so I'm just going to deal. Like it's easier to deal, but is it?
Easier to deal. No, it's not, because then like, you're never going to make everybody happy. And who cares if my brother's sad or mad? He wasn't sad. Who cares if he's mad that I left my first husband? Like he didn't have to, he wasn't in that marriage. He didn't know how bland and unfulfilling my life was. It was horrible. I was so underwhelmed with my marriage that I daydreamed that certainly there must be a different way to live life. And there is. Yeah. And you can be engaged and excited and deeply in love with your partner and have something really beautiful. Like, screw that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's such a great story. I also love that, especially the time that we're in, you wrote this book during quarantine. Like, and it's like, there's actually references to quarantine in here, which sounds really funny, but this is such a huge piece of our life. And I don't think anyone who's experienced, especially any parent who's gone through this, is like, this is not something you're going to forget. And so to have, I just think it's really cool to have a book that actually talks about some of the stuff we went through and like reminds you that like, this is real and we've experienced it. And
it's so real. And I'm so curious, Krista, what we will learn like years from now about what we've endured. You know, like I wrote a story about how, you know, I was suddenly a preschool teacher and I finally, for the first time, like let my kids see emotion as a mom, which actually is a tip that I would say changed my life and the way I parent was showing them emotion. And I was sitting on the ground and I was sobbing. I mean, it just like, I can go back to that moment today because it was so hard. The world shut down.
Yeah.
School was canceled. I'm trying to run my business. And as happens with a lot of women, like it was my, you know, my husband's job was bigger or seemed more important. So I was like, okay, well, I can be flexible because I'm in charge since I run the business. But running a preschool out of my house was not what I wanted to do. I thrive in my work. I don't thrive as a teacher. Otherwise I would have been a teacher, right? Yeah. I don't know the first thing about it. I have zero desire. And I was sitting on the floor sobbing to my kids and saying, you know, mom's doing the best she can. This is really hard and things are crazy. And my girls just like scooped me up in their arms. Yeah. And it's interesting because my older daughter, who's older, six, will still reference that. And me having the courage to show them life is hard and to talk about it with them changed the dynamic of our relationship for the better, because now I'm not making life look easy. You know, I used to make life look easy and I would just keep all the balls going as far as they were concerned. And I didn't show stress and anxiety. Now I do. And actually this is so good. It should have been in the book, but it happened after the book launched. Or after it was locked, the content was locked. This summer, I was anxious about a few things. I had a lot happening. And my six-year-old said, no, my younger daughter said, actually, she said, Mom, I think you need a feelings doctor. And my older daughter said, oh, Maeve, she has one. I just don't think it's working.
I know.
But the reason they know I have a feelings doctor is because we've talked about it. And so now we talk about feelings. And sometimes if you don't feel a way that feels good, you need help, right? Yeah. And so I needed to, you know, talk about that. And so now it's just part of our family vocabulary. Like, it's okay to feel sad. It's okay to feel worried. It's okay to be anxious. And it's what you do. It's normal. And it's what you do when you feel that way that matters, right? And it was so interesting. I'm like, oh, wow, they're picking up on the stress I'm having about my aging mother, because that was what was on my mind. And I had, you know, five older siblings blowing up my phone with lots of different ideas. And my heart was racing because I'm like, well, I do need to take care of this stuff, but also I'm the youngest of the family. My kids are the youngest, you know, like I have the most on my plate. Like the three older ones are basically all empty nesters. And it's just interesting. Like, I own a business. My kids are the youngest. I live in town with my mom, and that pressure feels explosive to me. And my kids called me out on it. And I was like, oh, wow, I need to inhale. I probably do need to unload this on a therapist. And that's what I did.
You know, so I listened to a lot of Brené Brown. I love her.
Don't you just want to be her next door neighbor?
I do. I really do. I feel like I should call her regularly. I won't. Don't worry, Brené Brown.
But we all want to. I know. She probably is listening. Yeah. Text me, Brené.
Yeah. but I feel like she talks so much about vulnerability and being able to show your kids that you're real gives them an opportunity to show up and be empathetic. And it teaches them that this is a thing that you have to do in life. And it doesn't matter if it's to a kid or to an adult, these are feelings and they're real and they're okay. And it's okay to show them. And then they get to be the bigger person. And how powerful it is that to allow your kids to show up for you and to let them know that it's okay to make mistakes and we are not perfect. In fact, I say this to my daughter all the time. Mommy doesn't know everything. Nobody knows everything. And I'm happy I don't, because that's a lot of pressure and you always can learn something new.
And I'm going to borrow that.
Take it. Because our kids do. They look at us to know everything and then we wear that weight.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll do this. Oh, I can do it. Oh, I'll take on that. Oh, I'll take on that. And I know how to fix this. It's just easier if I do it. And then we're doing everything, spinning ourselves in the big round. And our kids don't ever get a chance to show up for us. And they want to. And our partners don't ever get a chance to show up.
Right. If you don't tell them. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. At one point, I can't remember how old she was, but my oldest daughter said, Mom, you don't ever fail. And I was like, oh, well, that's a problem. So then I have like gone out of my way to show failure. Sometimes I've even like made stuff up. Like if something didn't go well for her, then I've made up a story about how something similar, because I'm like, oh, she needs to know that failure is a shared human experience and we fail every day. Like that's the one thing you can count on is today, you know, as we record this, it's a Thursday. And if you haven't failed by Thursday in your week, you know, Friday it's coming. You know, or Saturday. So buckle up.
But also there's something that you said, you shared that the story about, you know, feeling you're falling apart in that time, but there's something that you shared that I thought was really wonderful is that when your daughters recalled that time when you were teaching, they said that you were the best teacher. And I choked up. I mean, I'm choking up right now because I feel like so many of us are sitting in that spot feeling like we're not doing it. Like I'm failing here and I can't teach like them. And like, I'm losing my shit, pardon my language, but I'm losing my shit as I'm trying to do this. And like, I'm the worst mom and I can't, like, I'm dropping all these balls. And then what your kids are seeing is like, I love my mom. That was the best. I had so much fun.
She's the best teacher. Well, I'll tell you why. I don't think I said why they said it. It was because every day we were baking. And to the point where I was like, yeah, sure. Whatever I could find. Cause remember at that time, it was also stressful to find groceries.
Anything. Yeah.
So like anything in a can that like breadsticks in a can, you know, and then we made some sort of breadstick and everything had sprinkles. So the number of jars of sprinkles I had, and I will follow up with you and send you a photo after this. of like my daughters just like putting sprinkles directly in their mouths. And every day was like some sort of sprinkle bonanza baking class. That is why I was their favorite teacher. Cause it was like, screw it. Like, I literally don't know how I'll survive the day. So we're going to bake and we're going to see sugar.
I can't tell you how many times we just painted a box or found a rock to paint, or like today we're going to paint a box, or
that's so good.
We're going to make cookies because mommy really needs some cookies right now. Or let's make some bounties.
Because the freezer storage supply has depleted. I remember one day I was like, oh, this will be a great activity. We're going to go on a walking field trip. And I had a little color square for the rainbow, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, purple on a piece of paper. And we were going to go on a nature walk and you had to find something that was each color. Krista, I'm not kidding. That by the time we got to the sidewalk, they had already found every effing color. And I was like, no, we're taking this to the park and we're starting over. And by then the activity, you know, they didn't care. They already found their colors of the rainbow. It's like, we literally haven't even made it to the sidewalk. And you saw a cardinal and a blue jay and a green blade of grass and a blue sky and a green leaf. Like, I can't stand it. It was
wrong. You're doing the game wrong. We're starting. I think I had that similar experience. Like, we're going to find three leaves and like scavenger hunt. Like, we got up the street and it's like, well, we have all the things. So that's 10 minutes in my day. So
10 minutes. And so how am I going to fill the other 12 hours until they go to bed? Right? Like, oh, it's so hard. Earlier bedtimes. So that's one way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So in Heartwatch, you shared so many amazing stories and experiences. And I said before, you have such a beautiful way of like tying these to coaching moments and actually walking you through what to do. But how did you decide on what life experiences and coaching moments were most important to share in the book? I always wonder this reading somebody's book, like, how did you take a lifetime of experiences and moments and be like, these ones are the best ones to put in. I feel like the idea of me doing that overwhelms me. And you did it so beautifully.
Well, thanks. You know, for me, it's like thinking of the highs and lows in life. Like, what were my biggest moments, sad or happy, right? Mm-hmm. What did I learn? And what will resonate with readers? So it was really for me looking at the highs and lows. And in terms of the client stories, I tried to pick stories that are themes that I hear time and time again with the women I work with. So like, I talked about a client that was afraid to like get off of a nonprofit board she was serving, and I helped her write the email. And when she got rid of that obligation, like how lifted she felt, and it was a simple email. And it's funny, that client just realized that I was talking about her. And the first time she read HeartBoss, she's like, oh, that's so nice that Reagan does that for all of her clients. Her sister-in-law read it and was like, page 68 is about you. And she's like, it is? Are you sure? And I was like, oh yeah, that is about you. So really for my clients, it was like, what are the consistent things that I see women struggle with? And how can I share a story that's relatable? Because I see it in 98% of the women I coach. And so I share those stories. So it was intentional. Yeah.
It's great. And you did such a great job with it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. As an executive and life coach, you give so much amazing advice to others. What has been the most profound advice you've gotten in your life?
I love that. Probably my dad always said, tell people you're lucky, which is funny advice to share. But I mean, that's something that is with me from when I was a kid. He said, tell people you're lucky. People like to be around lucky people. And certainly I was born lucky because I came into a family that was really nurturing and loving. And I also work hard. And so I think the advice of, you know, always, I'm a glass, you know, 99% full person. And, you know, leading with that and leading with luck and joy and hard work has served me my entire life.
Yeah.
That's it.
I love it.
Tell people honestly, you're lucky.
I feel like I say that. Actually, one of the things I've always said was, I'm not lucky, I'm blessed.
Yeah.
mostly just because I've found most of the time I'm not lucky. So there's a little quote that you've had in here. It's something that you wrote that I thought was really great, was what you aren't changing, you're choosing. And you shared that story of being in this job that you were only in for like 4 days or 4.25 days and walking out. And the way that experience unfolded, because I feel like everyone sat in that job or that experience and be like, I really need to get out of here. But the most people don't. They don't walk. they don't give themselves the opportunity to see what else lies on the other side of that. And throughout this book, I thought it was so wonderful because it, that story led into this beautiful life that, and like, I'm all goosebumpy and teary eyed saying this, but it led into these beautiful experiences that turned one thing into the next. And I just thought, this is such a cool story to remind you that, like, taking that leap of faith and really following your gut, like you said, really does turn into the most beautiful experiences.
I mean, to think of what, thank you, number one. I'm so glad that resonated. To think of what my life would look like had I not walked out those doors, mm-hmm. like, I just shudder to think about it because the biggest gifts in my life happened because I walked out of a job that I knew I didn't want, right? And so yeah. What you aren't changing, you're choosing. If you're in a job that is nearly killing you, then change it, right? You always have options. You always have a choice to stay or go, to speak up or stay silent, right? So whatever it is, figure out, you don't have to walk the, it doesn't have to be like this big thing like I did. I was like, I'm out of here. You don't have to walk out the same day when you're like, I hate this so much. Props if you do. And if you do, call me because I want to celebrate you. But you can take the next best step, right? You can always take a step forward and be brave, right? Mm-hmm. And create your next. What you aren't changing, you're choosing. Choose the things that matter and fill your life up with joy. Yeah. Don't, we shouldn't be miserable all the time.
No. And if you do that, pray that you get to see that clown like you did. Yes. That cracked me up.
I mean, what are the chances that I left a job after 4.25 days and would be walking through a park and see a man dressed as a clown riding a unicycle? I mean, it was the biggest gift from above. I was like, if that guy can make that choice during a recession, then I can quit a job and land on my feet. And I did. So yeah, look for the guy on the unicycle and let him guide you if in doubt.
I love it.
Yeah, it was amazing. Honestly,
it was, I can't say this enough. If you haven't yet, to any of our listeners, please go buy this book. It's, and I'll be sharing links on how to find this, but it was such an amazing read. And like I said, there's so many amazing takeaways that I wish I could just quote your whole book to you. And well, read it because
it's been but fun to hear your perspective on what hit you. So thank you for sharing that. It's
really special. There's so much more that hit me, but I won't read it all. I want people to read it and really get as much out of it as I did. One of the questions I love asking all of my guests, and I think this would be a good one for you, is what is your favorite mom hack?
Oh, you know what? It's in the book, Uncrustables. And I learned that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I was giving a talk and we were talking about things that we feel guilty about. So like, for example, I'm having a birthday party. And by birthday party, I mean, my daughter has a friend coming over Saturday afternoon and we're serving Happy Meals. So that is like, make your life easy, serve Uncrustables for lunch. Like, you don't have to go over the top with everything. Like, it's okay to buy a peanut butter and jelly that's already in the freezer section wrapped in cellophane if it saves you time and energy. So just like, let yourself off the hook.
You actually, this is something that I highlighted. You wrote, find the plates and napkins moment, seize it and enjoy the benefits. And in reference to the kids party or the school party where you choose to make the cupcakes and kill yourself trying to make them the Pinterest perfect cupcakes, when all you had to do was pick the plates and napkins and show up and it would have been the same and you would have been asleep.
Or buy a package of Ho-Hos, you know, like kids love Ho-Hos. I think, you know, like you don't have to make like the perfect spider looking cupcake for the Halloween party if Hostess already makes something that looks like a spider or something that's cool, right? And they do. So they don't stay up until 2 a.m. if you don't really, really want to do that.
Yeah. Also, you don't have to deal with all of the vegetarian diets and all the diets as well. Like Hostess is already vegan, I think, and it has nothing real in it. So you're good. Right.
Perfect. That's perfect. I love that.
So Reagan, where can my listeners find you?
Honestly, anywhere, it's at Reagan Walsh. So on Instagram, it's Reagan Walsh Life Coach, LinkedIn, Reagan Walsh, Twitter, Reagan Walsh, Facebook, Reagan Walsh, reaganwalsh.com. So you can find me if you put my name in Google, you'll find me.
Awesome. I'm going to be sharing all the links on how to find you, how to find your book, all of them. Your website's beautiful, by the way. I love going through it, and all your resources. You offer so many free resources that I just think is so wonderful.
Thank you. I hope to serve other people and help them make life easier.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for writing this book, for being coming on and sharing it with me. I just had so much fun.
Thank you, Krista. So fun to be here today.
Thank you so much for listening. I am so grateful and humbled that you would take the time to tune in. Please continue to join me as I work to change the stigma around postpartum and help to build a community where women can feel supported, loved, and empowered. If you'd like to connect with me, follow me on Instagram at So You Had a Baby Podcast, or you can check out the website at www.soyouhadababypod.com. And if you want to hear more and be part of this amazing community of mamas, be sure to subscribe and share the podcast.